T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All righty, let's head to the Dial Pad guest line, where we've got a Football Hall of Famer, a 6-time Pro Bowler, a 5-time All-Pro, and he's set to get inducted into the 49ers Hall of Fame on Sunday. Terrell Owens, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us, man.
Oh, thank you guys, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'll start out by asking you, what's it mean to you to go into the 49ers Hall of Fame? You're somebody that's gotten a lot of accolades, and obviously you're already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. What does it mean to go into the Niners Hall of Fame?
It means a great deal, man. This is where I started my career. I think a lot of people that know me, and I've spoken on this on a number of occasions. I'm a kid that came out of Alexander City, Alabama. Relatively small town, went to a small school in the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. In some ways, I think people now know where UTC is, kind of put them on the map. They gave me an opportunity, and I was obviously drafted by the Niners. They gave me an opportunity, and I just made the most of it. So, you know, man, I'm very honored. I'm blessed, and I never thought I would play beyond the collegiate level. And so, again, people that know me, they know that's the God honest truth. I never knew that I had the ability to play beyond the collegiate level. So I'm very thankful, blessed, and, you know, thankful for the 49ers for giving me this opportunity to be in their Hall of Fame.
Terrell, how did you go from somebody who didn't think you were going to play on the next level at all to one of the greatest receivers of all time? When did you figure out that not only you could play in the NFL, but you could be a great?
3 D's, bro. I thought about this around the time that I got my first nomination to be in the Hall of Fame, and I really didn't have an idea what the Hall of Fame was, and I just started to kind of reflect on everything that had transpired for me to even be a nominee for the Hall of Fame, and my 3 D's are desire, dedication, and discipline. I had a desire to be something. I just didn't know what it was. And I coupled that with my dedication and my discipline. And so when you put all those things together, man, here I am. I'm a Pro Football Hall of Famer, and Sunday I'm going to be a San Francisco 49er Hall of Famer.
Yeah, T.O., you deserve every bit of it, man. And you've had a wonderful career. I got you as my all-time top 2 receiver. And you've had so many great plays, and I just wondered, do you remember some? Because I want to bring one up. I was on the sofa. I'll never forget. You were a part of the Eagles team, and they threw it to you in the flat, and Champ Bailey was out there, and you did my version of the shook it and took it 91 yards to the house. Can you recall that specific play?
Absolutely. Yeah,
that was, you're a bad boy.
No, that's one of my favorite plays, too, because obviously going up against Champ Bailey, he was one of the top corners around that time, he and Charles Woodson. And, obviously I was, starting to emerge and be the player that I was at the receiver position. And every time I started to play against top corners, everybody always, was, chiming and chomping at the bits at the game, and people were saying that they were going to shut me down. And so it motivated me. And so throughout the offseason, I trained myself, hard enough to really put on a show during the course of the season. So I worked on a lot of things as far as my core, my fast twitch muscles. I really wasn't known for my speed coming out of college. So these are some of the things that I prided myself on. So, yeah, it was a smoke route. Donovan threw it out there. Typically, you don't go inside on a route like that, but I honestly gave him a little fake outside, dipped inside, and then I beat the now GM of the 49ers, John Lynch. He was a safety at the time, and I beat him to the house. So definitely, that was definitely one of my favorite plays as well.
T.O., man, I grew up here in San Francisco, so I literally watched every one of your snaps when you were in red and gold. I remember when you did get drafted, I thought it was going to be J.J. Stokes who was going to be the man after Jerry Rice, and it was you. And I feel like that turning point was that wild card game against the Green Bay Packers, a big time game because then you guys never beat the Packers. I felt like, damn, you're going to lose to Brett Favre and Mike Holmgren again. And you were having a rough game. So kind of take us through that game up until that iconic catch when Steve Young stumbled in the pocket, threw a dime to you. You took the hit from Sharper. Obviously, you're crying tears of joy. And I thought you guys were going to be on your way. But kind of tell us about that game when before that play, because what were you thinking about? Because it wasn't one of your best games.
No, it was perseverance, man. And as you know, that you know, sometimes football is sometimes you know, it kind of can mirror, you know, life at times, and you're gonna have your ups and downs, the ebb and flows, and that's literally how it was. I mean, I dropped a touchdown pass in the far end zone during that game. Had a fumble. Had a few drop passes. So. I just had, you know, a lot of my teammates to support me, but standing on the sideline, and obviously we kept ourselves close in the game. And so they had Antonio Freeman. He scored that last touchdown, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm standing on the sideline. And I remember during the course of that year, they had something they had something what they call the GOAT of the game, and that wasn't a good thing. And so at that point in time, I was the GOAT of the game. And so I just said to myself, I gotta make a play somehow. I was pressing. I was, you know, trying to make a play, and then I just had to just settle down. And so we had an opportunity late in the game with probably like about 8 seconds to go on the clock. And so we had a couple plays. We had to get it. We had to go. We had to take some shots to the end zone. And right before I caught the pass, we called a play all go double comeback, and Steve Young threw the ball to JJ out to the comeback, and it almost got intercepted. So we got one more opportunity, and I remember breaking the huddle. He goes, "Man, you guys, you know, we got to take a shot to the end zone." And so I knew on that particular route before, it was cover two. I ran down the middle. I was wide open. Steve didn't see it. So I think I may have mentioned something about it. So I just ran the same exact route. And so Steve Young, obviously, like I said, with Jerry Rice on the other side, you know, that showed a lot of poise on him to not force the ball to the greatest receiver of all time at that time, knowing that, okay, everybody's probably going to be keying on him. But Steve Young stayed to his principles of seeing and throwing the ball where the open receiver was, and there I was down the middle. And so I remember the announcer, I think it was Joe Starkey, I remember just hearing it. He goes, "He hasn't held on to anything all day." and I came up with that play. And so as you mentioned, man, it was tears of joy. I remember the first thing that I caught, the first thing that I thought when I caught the ball was, you know, I thought about my grandmother and the things that she's taught me, just having faith and believing in yourself when I caught the ball and hit the ground. And so the first thing that I came out of my mouth was, "Thank you, Jesus." And so, as you said, man, it was tears of joy, and it was one of those things. I went from go to the game to hero of the game.
Yeah, Terrell, unbelievable. And, you know, like the thing I think about is football's such an emotional sport, and like emotion or tears are viewed a lot of times as weakness, and yet you had tears after one of the toughest catches in NFL history, where you got absolutely crushed. I mean, were any of those tears because it hurt? Were you in pain at that point?
No, dude. Sometimes when you look at football games and you see hits, and you're like, "Oh my God, that had to hurt." And then, you know, you see hits, and then, you know, guys get up and they're wincing, and sometimes they don't get up, and they're like the softest hits ever. But it was one of those plays. It was a bang-bang play, and I'm pretty sure because of the adrenaline and things of that nature. But, no, that's why I prepared myself throughout the course of the offseason to take brutal hits like that. That's why I lifted the weights that I did. That's why I was, you know, 22 pounds. That's what I did during the offseason to prepare myself for, you know, the beating, the bumps and bruises that I took during the season. But that's what made me, you know, who I was on the football field. It was because of that physical presence and what I brought to the game. So I knew that there were going to be times that, you know, I had to go over the middle and take some hits like that. So and again, that's why sometimes people think, you know, pedestrian people, they watch us play and they feel like they can play the game, you know, because we make it look so easy.
Yeah, I mean, real quick, yeah, I thought you were hurt on that play. I wonder if these guys do too, but that's what I thought, because you got popped. Buddy.
You know what I want to know from T.O. is, what about Jerry Rice when he did make that one catch? There was no instant replay that year. Almost cried, but the ref said he was down. It could have been a fumble, T.O. Did you guys ever talk about that?
Well, I mean, it's human error.
Right.
Those referees are still making errors.
No
and
doubt.
We have instant replay now. So who knows if that play would have been changed, considering, you know, some of the plays that have happened, you know, this year. Look at the Saints last year and this year already.
That's true.
You know, and we have instant replay. So who's to say that play would have been reversed? But, you know, again, at that time, they went with their judgment based on what they saw at that time. And so, unfortunately for the Green Bay Packers, it didn't get reviewed. And again, like I said, the rest is history.
T.O., I could be wrong, but you see a lot of receivers making these these fantastic catches, and they're wearing the gloves. I've never seen you don the gloves. And my question to you, since you've been retired, has there been a receiver that you sit at home and like, man, he reminds me of me? And my second part is, for your money, who's the best receiver in the NFL right now?
It's hard to see. I don't think there's a guy that in size, physical size and stature. I think you look at DK Metcalf. I mean, he has, you know, that physique. Other than that, I'm trying to think, there's not anybody out there that's going to, you know, possess that physical presence. That's going to, you know, catch it, catch every route in the route tree, especially what we prided ourselves on in the 49er offense, was, you know, taking the short pass and taking it the distance. I think you have to be really honest with yourself when you talk about some of the best receivers in the game today. And in my mind, who comes to mind is just from a consistent standpoint, especially the last 6 or 7 years, is Antonio Brown. And then, you know, you talk about Julio Jones. He would be obviously the next person that I would think that poses that physical presence that kind of reminds, you know, myself of me, especially because this guy, man, he can do his catch radius is all over the charts. He can do anything, can run any route. This guy is very explosive, as you saw last week. This guy took a little short screen pass and took it to the house. So those are some of the guys that, you know, remind me of myself. And so we talk about best receivers in the game right now. The top two, I would say, is Julio Jones and Antonio Brown.
Terrell Owens joining us on 95.7 The Game. He's a football Hall of Famer, and he's going to be inducted into the 49ers Hall of Fame on Sunday. Giants manager Bruce Bochy got his 2,000th win last night. We were just throwing around some great coaches and players in the Bay Area. Who's the best coach you ever played for, Terrell?
Hands down, Andy Reid, who's now the coach for the Kansas City Chiefs. Hands down.
Why?
He recognized, you know, obviously playing against him when I was in San Francisco, there were some great matchups. They had that secondary with Michael Lewis and Brian Dawkins, who's a fellow Hall of Famer. And there was an opportunity with, you know, toward the end of my career when I, you know, the Niners traded me to Baltimore. I rebuked that trade. And so I wanted to go to a team where I felt like I had an opportunity to win and compete for a championship. And obviously with everything that was swirling, you know, out there about me as far as my personality, locker room stuff, this guy didn't listen to any of that. He talked to George Stewart. He talked to guys, coaches that work with me personally and closely to get a correct, really bead on who I was. He saw who I was as a player, but he wanted to know who Terrell Owens, the person, was. And he talked to George Stewart, who was my receiver coach, to the end of my career there in with San Francisco. And he gave me an opportunity to be the receiver that I wanted to be there in San Francisco toward the end of my career. I thought that Mariucci didn't allow me to flourish and do the things that I felt like I could do as a receiver that I became once I left there. And Andy Reid, again, he's an offensive genius in my mind. He allowed me to be the player. He's a player's coach. And as you see, with him leaving from Philly, doing the great things that he's doing there in Kansas City, like I said, there's a reason why he's my favorite coach.
Hey, Andy Reid is an offensive genius, T.O. You see what he's doing with T.O. But I want to talk about those early years with the Niners, because you did talk about the trade when they did trade you to Baltimore. Then that got reneged, and then you go to Philadelphia. I just remember those teams. We're just talking about the Packers game. You guys go to Atlanta the next week, and I thought that Falcons team was a fluke. Garrison Hurts gets hurt on the first play of the game.
Right.
That kind of stole the running game away from you guys. I thought you guys were on your way. You beat Denver the year before. Heck, when you guys came back against the New York Giants to play Tampa Bay, I thought you guys were a couple pieces away. So I ask you, T.O., do you look back at the way you left San Francisco and regret anything? And did you ever think you'd come back and be in the team's Hall of Fame?
No, I don't regret it because, again, I think, you know, at the time, Coach Mariucci, again, he was a coach, I think, at that time. I'm not for sure. I can't remember.
He was. Yep.
But I felt like, you know, there were things that, you know, that he as a coach could have done or said to probably could have extended, you know, my career there in San Francisco. And I have a bitter taste in my mouth about that. And so, again, when you talk about that coach and player relationship, you know, it deteriorated, you know, to the point of no return. And there are things that I've learned since then that he did and tried to do that wasn't really favorable for me, that really tried to put him in a better light as far as our relationship. And I didn't like it. Again, at the end of the day, you know, trades and things of that nature, it's part of the business. But you look at how I was being productive on that football field. Like I said, everything, you know, that has transpired, I think people know that I'm not the person that the media had, you know, made me out to be or portrayed me to be. Again, it's all about, you know, the media talking to this person and that person. Dude, I wasn't a bad locker room guy. And I think, you know, every team that I played on, there are players that have even come out and said, you know, I was never a problem. You never heard a player say that I was an issue. It was only, like I said, having arguments or disagreements with a coach or a player, whatever the case may be, that happens every day. That happens every year. It's no different. But for whatever reason, they made me out to be the scapegoat. And so when you talk about the next part of your question is, did I think I would, you know, come back to 49ers, end up in a uniform and maybe retire in there? Absolutely. Around the time when they were bringing guys in and working guys out, you know, they brought Randy Moss in. You know, for me personally, I thought that was a slap in the face. You know, here I am. I played 8 years with the Niners. I wanted to let me have an opportunity to extend or end my career where it started. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, it never happened. And I definitely, like I said, Randy came there. And he mustered, I don't know what, maybe a couple of touchdowns. That would have never happened, you know, on my watch, because that's not how I played. You know, everybody knows the passion. They saw it, you know, for 8 years. I definitely felt like I had something to offer. I could have definitely, you know, donned that uniform one more time. But, you know, I've put things in the past. It is what it is. You know, I'm happy to be where I am now. I made it to the Pro Football Hall of Fame regardless of some of those things that have happened and even some of the things that people have said about me. That's what I've done throughout the course of my career, just kind of just held my head up high, you know, really believed in myself, kept that faith and really did a lot of things, you know, that my grandmother taught me. And so when I look back on my career, you know, you talk about, earlier those three D's, desire, dedication, and discipline. I can only commend myself for how she raised me. And I have to give a shout out to George Stewart. Because again, if he wasn't the coach that he was, you know, going from a special teams coach to a receiver coach to coach, you know, probably at that time when everybody was calling me the enigmatic type of receiver, a problem child or what have you, he didn't believe it because he saw it on an everyday basis. And so he deserves a lot of recognition as much as anybody, because he helped me become something special. And it takes special people to do that. And so Coach Stewart was that guy for me.
T.O., that's great stuff. Very real. and you've earned everything that you've gotten, that jacket, the Hall of Fame, the stats.
Yep.
But one thing that bothers me about your career is the Super Bowl where you broke your leg and came back. I don't think that gets talked about enough. And I just want to know, to you, did you know a week before the Super Bowl you were going to be ready? Was it a dark time? How did you get back from that injury that you suffered from the Roy Williams tackle to not only come back but ball out in the Super Bowl?
Well, just as I said, man, I've always been a person of faith, you know, and my grandmother raised me in the church. That's something that she taught us, is number one is faith. And again, faith is, you know, doing something or seeing something, believing in something that people feel that are, that's impossible. And so with me, I knew after the surgery, I put my whole entire, like I put my heart and soul into rehab. I put my, before I even did rehab, I had faith that I would be able to get back on that field given the opportunity. And I did a radio interview leaving Baltimore the day that I had had surgery on the way back. And they asked me the question, you know, would I be ready for the Super Bowl? And I told that guy with no hesitation, I said, if our team wins, you know, in those playoff games, and I said, and they get to the Super Bowl, I'll be ready.
Mm.
I will be ready. And, you know, just as, you know, you said, I was labeled selfish. And I, for whatever reason, when it came to me, people just didn't want to give me my just due credit. There are announcers, commentators that called that game, that called me selfish for playing in the Super Bowl.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, had it been Tom Brady or Brett Favre or anybody else, they would have probably gotten, you know, so much credit for doing what they – for overcoming odds. I mean, that's last year. Tom Brady got – they were all drooling over Tom Brady because he played with some stitches in his hands.
Right.
And I hear I had two screws and a plate, came back in within 6.5-7 weeks, you know, for an injury that should have taken, you know, at least 3 to 4 months to get back on the football field.
Terrell, yeah, I want to follow up with that. We're talking to Terrell Owens. He is a Football Hall of Famer. He's being inducted into the 49ers Hall of Fame on Sunday. You know, we watched Kevin Durant for 3 years here at Golden State, and he was a player who was he knew when he was getting criticized. And I guess what I want to ask you is, you keep hearing stuff about yourself that you don't think is true. You feel like you're being portrayed in a way that's not who you are. How do you decide what to let go and what and when to kind of stand up for yourself?
Well, now we have, and that's what I think with fortunate, you know, Kevin, you know, he's in an era where, you know, there are so many platforms for players to voice, you know, to have a voice for themselves. Whether it's social media, there's a number of other platforms. You got Uninterrupted, you have the Players Tribune, Overtime, you have all these platforms, you know, and that guys are even creating themselves to voice themselves, to dispute, you know, some of the things that the media is saying, you know, like about players that aren't necessarily true. You know, they're saying things for you know, especially Skip Bayless during the course of my career. He was saying a lot of things for the wow value. That wasn't true. You know, get clickbait, you know, now is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think as an athlete, and I've even, you know, talked to Antonio Brown with his situation leaving Pittsburgh. I talked to him a few times last year. Number one, you just got to go out there and let your play do the speaking for you. With me, when I had a lot of these things that were going on in certain situations, I knew that how the media was because I watched it. I watched ESPN on a regular. Before that was NFL Network. You know, ESPN was, you know, the voice of sports. So everybody tuned in, you know, in the masses. So everybody listened to whatever they had to say, and they really listened to it like it was gospel. And so for me, I knew that the world was so tuned into ESPN, and anything that they said came out of their mouth, they believed it. So I had to do what I had to do, number one, you know, for my team, for my teammates, and that was play well. Because if I went out, whatever the situation was during the course of that week, and I went out and I played bad, they were going to have a field day come Monday, because all it was going to do is validate what they were saying all during the course of the week. So I was in control of pretty much my play. I couldn't worry about what they said about me. Did I hear it? Yeah, absolutely. As a human being, did it sting a little bit to hear some untrue things said about me when their character, you know, they're trying to characterize you? Again, these are things, again, we are human beings. We're not only just football players, but we're people. We have to walk out, you know, and see people when we're not in those uniforms. People form an opinion based on what these people are saying about us as athletes. It's not a good feeling. They don't know what it's like. They think, oh, just because we make a lot of money, we get the glitz and the glamour, that I we're not human. And so that's where, again, when you have guys like Kevin Durant, you know, people want to say that he's trolling or he's clapping back, this and that, and the other. That's because we're human, and they're saying untrue things. If you want to really get to know a person, really get to know a person, not just hearsay. And that's where, again, a lot of those things are starting to come up, with a lot of guys, you know, going back and forth, bickering with certain people in the media because they know that some of the stuff that's being said is not true.
T.R., we could talk to you for 4 hours. We really could, but we know we got to let you go. So real quick, right, man, trust me. So you brought up Antonio Brown, and we saw the way it worked out in Oakland. He's now a Patriot. What do you think about the way Antonio Brown acted during training camp and kind of forced his way out of Oakland and became a Patriot?
I don't think it was a situation where, I think in the beginning, where he forced himself out. Again, I think Antonio Brown just being Antonio Brown. I think, you know, when you have a guy that really can, I don't condone everything that has transpired since he left Pittsburgh and since he, you know, obviously has gotten with the New England Patriots. I don't condone everything that he's done, but I do feel him in a sense because this is a guy that was drafted in the sixth round. I was drafted in the third round, went to a small school, so he played with that chip on his shoulder. Honestly, if you look at his career, the time that, you know, up until last year, we really haven't heard of Antonio Brown, actually the person or the character that everybody's now seeing, because he didn't have that money. This guy played with a chip on his shoulder as he was a sixth rounder. People are overlooked. And again, his play spoke very, very loudly for himself, because the last six or seven years there in Pittsburgh, this dude really established himself as one of the best players, you know, as a receiver to play the game of football. And so I think when you think about him now, like I said, having and making the money that he wanted, this is something that guys that are drafted late round or they feel overlooked, this is how they feel. And so I think, you know, some of the things that, you know, in which he's handled certain situations, I don't think he's handled it the right way. I think he's trying to get a message out there to a number of players about what goes on behind the scenes that's not being talked about, when you have, you know, actually especially football players that are now commentating, that are now in the booth, that have the platform and knows what's going on behind the scenes or in the locker rooms. They're not doing themselves great justice to know what's going on, and then they're not reporting. They're in the best position to go from a player to now an announcer or a commentator to really be informative to a lot of these fans out there, and they're not doing that. They're not being transparent enough to let people know what's going on in those locker rooms. And so I understand, and I feel for Antonio Brown in the sense, I just feel like whatever plan he has is not being executed the way he wants to. But I don't agree with everything, but I definitely feel where he's coming from.
Hey, Terrell, I mean, I can't thank you enough. I mean, I just looked up at the clock. Man, you've been with us for a half hour. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. Congratulations.
Absolutely.
On what's coming up Sunday. Congratulations for the Hall of Fame. And just good luck to you, man.
And I know Lorenzo Neal is on this show with us on Tuesday, man. Definitely want to give him, show him some love for being a Hall of Fame nominee this upcoming year. So again, I know, you know, this has been about me, but, you know, now knowing what the Hall of Fame is about and the magnitude of it and what it means. And so again, you know, whether he gets in or not, but just to be in conversation, and just to be a Hall of Fame nominee, that's very, very special. So I want to say congratulations, send a congratulations out to Larizza O'Neal.
Absolutely. Awesome. Terrell, thank you so much again. Really appreciate it. And enjoy Sunday.
Thanks, T.O.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.